In today's episode of Let the Movie Speak, we take a look back on the 1940s series and give out some awards to our favorite directors, acting performances, and some of our favorite moments in the second ever Golden Spud Awards. Hello, everybody. We are back.
We're back in action.
Back in action for our second season's yes. worth of awards.
Yes.
In the form of
the Golden Spuds. Yes. We were going to do it in tandem. And then there was.
Never told me. So I didn't. Yeah. Anyway, this is our award show where we give out some golden potatoes to the, in this case, the movies of the 40s that we witnessed. And what did we think of this season, Justin?
It was different than the 30s.
Yeah.
Because it was 10 years in the future.
That's the main reason.
But it was also, I don't know if this is probably rests with us. This is our fault, in other words, that I don't feel like this list was as consistent as the 30s. There was some bigger ups and some bigger downs.
Yeah, I think that'll be reflected in the way we distribute awards today.
I think so. We've tried to cultivate a list of certain...
Cultivate, because potatoes.
Yes! Well, we do have our sponsors. We have more sponsors this time.
Yeah, we've got a couple.
Yeah, we're very excited, and I hope you're excited too.
They're going to do some good in the world.
They are really... they're out to change things,
yeah.
Let me tell you.
For you and for...
For America.
Yeah.
For the universe, and everywhere in between.
Yeah, between those... So I thought this season was I think as enjoyable of highs when they were there, but as we'll get into, expectations were
not always great,
like not always met in very weird ways.
That's fair.
I think a little less predictable overall.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I mean, there's a few we walked into going like, well, this is gonna be easy great. Ace in the hole.
Yeah,
but the hole went down deep and I lost that ace.
That ace was gone, and there was just like a wet noodle down there, and it was like,
and
what
it was
is
laughing
this?
At us.
Yeah,
and was, the noodle's name was Sam,
and it was sentient. Yes,
he said, hey.
So if someone asked how was the season, that's what I would say. Well, we met Sam. What do you think?
Yeah. Need we say more?
Yeah, I think probably we should stop. Anyway, before we get into the awards today and have some fun, because this is not like a normal show where we break down one particular movie, we do a little bit of looking back and we remember the things that really stuck out to us, for better or for worse, recognize some good, maybe recognize some bad. We would love for you to interact with us on social media in one way or another. We want more people to listen to the show.
We want you to recognize us.
Recognize us. See us
for our greatness.
For who we are. No. Recognize us for our greatness by liking the Instagram post, commenting on something, retweet something. Get somebody to listen to the show. Who doesn't listen to the show? That would be super awesome because...
Force them if necessary.
Gotta force them because
it's not fun if you don't.
We're contractually obligated to make 700 episodes, so we're gonna be here for a while.
Yeah,
and it'd be great if somebody listened. Every episode takes 37 hours to record.
Mm-hmm.
We just whittle it down to a clean hour.
We both work 80-hour work weeks.
Yeah,
plus not a lot of free time.
No, I don't have a life. My family left long ago.
Yeah, wow. I thought I was the only one.
No. Anyway, like and subscribe. Find us on social media. That's all. Let's get into what we watched this week. Justin, what did you watch this week?
I watched, after 41 freaking episodes.
Oh, yeah.
All season one of In Treatment.
Yes.
This was an HBO series about psychoanalysis that started out really interesting. I think this came on around 2008 or something. HBO actually revived it recently with a different therapist, different different everything.
You're doing a lot of sighing and a lot of eye rolling. Like, this is work for
me. I loved this. Yeah. Yeah. No, I really did. I think this concept still has a lot of potential. Apparently, it was adapted from an Israeli show about the same thing, and they just lifted some of the scripts, you know. Well, they translated them. I'm not very good at Hebrew.
Yeah, it just some episodes are just randomly in Hebrew.
Yeah,
it's a little confusing.
Yeah, we will save the Yiddish phrases for later.
Yeah.
Anyway, this show is essentially about a doctor who is, you know, interviewing a different patient in every episode, and at the end of each week, he actually goes and visits his therapist because he needs some help too.
Right.
So it's interesting. It was very ambitious because it's a half an hour show, but they did 5 nights a week.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's a lot of content.
Yeah.
And it was probably too much. You know, I think there's a little too much meandering.
Sure.
Not a lot. And you know, all of that is whatever. I just kind of expected, because some of the writing here is incredibly strong. Some of the stuff really is good.
It better be.
But unfortunately, it doesn't really deliver.
Yeah.
At least in the first season. I mean, the reason I started this show, honestly, is because I wanted to get to season two, where John Mahoney is one of the patients.
Nice.
And I can't do it now. And it's not because, like, there was anything that necessarily offended me about this show. Or sure. It's just there was no real answers at the end.
So you're saying you've only watched one season and it's 40 episodes?
It's 41 episodes.
And you're not even going to go on to season two because it was so unsatisfying. Wow. I thought you meant you'd watch the entire series.
Nope. That's one season.
Holy cow. Yeah.
It's a lot to go through nothing.
Yeah, what's the equivalent of that? That would be like digging for gold and finding finding Sam.
Yeah,
the wet sentient noodle.
Yeah.
Hey, it's me again.
Yeah, that you don't want that.
You don't. No. And so the resolution here is at the end, he's talking to his therapist and he's like, "What do I do?" And she says, "Well, that's something we can talk about." And that's supposed to be like, "Ooh, wow, yeah, this is awesome." And it's like, this is not awesome because nothing happened. These characters didn't grow. They didn't, you know, so it's really sad. I feel like there's a great concept and there's some great execution of the middle game, you know, and then no end game, which is not an Avengers joke.
Nice.
Sam.
Okay. Well, I guess I'll take your word for in treatment.
I mean, don't have to. No one has to take my word for anything. I would encourage listeners to disagree with us even vehemently.
Yes.
Because that's kind of what art is. Nothing if we just all go, yeah, that's good. Then you've never met Sam, clearly. But anyway, enough about in treatment. What did you watch this week?
I went to the movies.
Oh my goodness. You lucky man.
I saw The Forever Purge.
Oh, that's in treatment season two.
Yeah, it's a comedy.
Yeah.
About family.
Uh-huh.
With a dog that talks.
Wow.
No.
Okay.
The Forever Purge is in the series of the Purge movies. Yeah. The Purge movies all center on this concept that, like, the government has sanctioned crime for 12 hours.
Right.
Is
that not a thing right now?
No. Have you been purging? I'm sorry, dude. Yeah, the police are on their way.
This is awkward.
So the crime is legal for one day. Everybody gets out their violent, you know, stuff, and then everybody's happy and peaceful for the rest of the year. It's sort of a pulpy, almost Twilight Zone-y kind of premise. Yeah. I've only seen the first one, which is more of just like a home invasion movie, not anything really to write home about. And then I haven't seen anything in between. And then this was out, and I had seen whatever else I wanted to see. So I was like, I guess I'll go see that. And what's interesting about it is the timing of the story, right? Like it was supposed to come out a year ago and it would have been pre our election and all of that stuff. So it's trying to be very, you know, finger on the pulse of the culture. Yeah. This is America today. If you just add a little bit of gas to the fire, this could happen, you know, which I'm like, it's a B movie. Yeah. So like, I don't care. I don't feel like they're doing anything dangerous with any of that.
Sure.
It's not shooting for the stars. It's just like taking advantage of themes, right?
Yeah.
But what's interesting is it came out a year later than it was supposed to, because lots of movies got delayed last year for a whole year. And so this comes out a year before now, and it sort of predicts some events in the world that happened with great specificity.
Okay.
Right? Like, let's say, you know, a attack on the U.S. Capitol or something like that. Real specific stuff. You see really similar stuff happen in the movie.
Did something happen at the Capitol?
I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so stuff like that that would have been like, I'm not going to say prophetic, but pretty spot on as a pulpy movie predicting things. And now I look back on it and I'm like, okay, I get that was going to come out before this particular group of things happened, but it just doesn't have the same kind of, it has a more used up feel. And I don't think that's its fault.
Yeah.
But its main sin, if it has one, is that it's incredibly stupid. It's trying to be really relevant and I don't know about like capital W woke, but like it's pushing this narrative of like, you know, well, if the purge happened, what would an immigrant family experience? And what if the wall was real across the whole border? And like, I don't care, make that movie. But if you're not going to bother to really like bring any of that home, and it's really just like stupid gunfights and crazy cartoonish skinhead people, there's just nothing there. You know, there's nothing there. So I would say you could skip the Forever Purge.
Oh,
in real life,
really?
In the movie.
Okay.
So that's what we watched this week. We are going now to enter a land of green, a land. Money. No. A land.
Land.
Filled with potatoes.
Come all.
Yes. To the land of potatoes.
And golden they be.
And in this case,
they sparkle.
They sparkle like great grandpa's golden tooth.
And they are rich
in fiber. Anyway, welcome to the Golden Spuds. This is the second, not annual, the second something.
Second one.
The second one. We're going to give out some awards today. Some prestigious, some
not prestigious.
The opposite of that. and I'm here, Justin. You're here.
I'm here.
The potato committee has spoken.
Can we turn my potato phones down?
No.
Is that possible?
No, I'm gonna just make this all better for us. Wait 1 second. For our first award, Justin.
Yes.
I think this is the best way to start off because in speaking about the season, I think the biggest surprise to us was that idea of like expectations versus the reality critical acclaim versus what are we actually getting here, right? So for our first award, we have something we're calling the worst legacy movie, right? And the point of this award is there's this massive chasm for what a movie's reputation and accolades may be in the film community and the public at large and artsy film nerdery corners, right? Of a lot of these movies that we put on the list. And for us, we're looking at them like, really?
Yep.
Like, is it really one of the greatest films of all time?
Right. It's always safe to go back and reevaluate stuff, right?
Please.
We did not come to any of these. Well, I mean, actually, we came to quite the opposite conclusion, I think, of what we expected to for some reason.
I wanted to love every one of these.
Right.
Yes.
And frankly, you can't. At least we couldn't.
I don't think you can.
For good reason.
Yeah. So, the award for worst legacy movie, the nominees are as follows. Number one, Great Expectations from 1946, which is number five on the BFI
number
top 100.
Number five. What's going on in Britain?
Apparently only four things better than Great Expectations.
But there's clearly.
I've seen some of the other movies on the list. They're better.
I don't know where does it come from that this movie is so lauded? Yeah. It's very average.
Very average.
There's not anything like I don't recall a whole lot of things being really ridiculous in this movie. Mm-mm. Except maybe when what's his name, the blacksmith like stepdad, comes to visit Pip and has like a Seinfeld Kramer moment of like falling over himself and splashing, like it's like
I'm so poor I spilled the tea.
Right, it just turns into Three Stooges. I don't know, but other than that there's nothing really outrageous or like, you know, like just terrible acting.
No,
but it's just a very lame adaptation.
It's
of
dry
source material that's not really lame.
It's like chewing on chunks of cardboard. Yes.
Yeah, I don't enjoy doing that. I know everyone's different.
Yeah. Well,
I will eat peanuts with the peanut shell. And yeah. those kind of become cardboard.
Of course.
But I will not eat real cardboard. And nor do I want to eat this adaptation of Great Expectations.
No, agreed. But it's number five on the top BFI list.
Who's voting?
All of Britain.
All of Britain voted.
Yes.
As one man. Little pamphlets fell down from the sky.
Yes, and they went, hip, hip.
Hello.
Do you have a pen?
What's yes. this then?
Number five. That's how it happened. Number two on the list, Bicycle Thieves.
Oh, my goodness.
1948. This movie won an honorary Academy Award in 1950. So I have to think that had to do with release dates, right? Like a movie came out in Italy, took a little while to circulate. It made its way to American audiences and then was recognized by the Academy a little bit later. It was deemed in 1952, a couple years after that, the greatest film of all time. By Sight and Sound magazine's poll of filmmakers and critics.
Wow.
Yeah.
Greatest film of all time.
That far, I guess.
That's isn't that kind of a silly thing? Just in itself? The greatest movie of all time?
How do you
can't.
It's apples to papayas.
Right.
And pineapples.
And watermelons.
And yeah.
And didgeridoos.
And didgeridoos. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I think
to be fair, we are the outcasts in this.
Yeah.
That seems to still be the consensus today.
Yes.
Even Roger Ebert, our good friend, before he died, wrote another thing about how, like, I revisited this and it's got more to say than it did originally.
Yeah.
It somehow evolved in the vault.
I think for Bicycle Thieves, more than anything, it really is a cheap message. Right, like it's selling a cheap message. It's very low-hanging fruit. But if you do any sort of real examination or thought about it, it reveals itself as that. Like it's plastic fruit or something, right? Like the what it's trying to hammer home over and over and over and over again is just simply it's far from reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you recognize that, it only has one note.
Yeah.
So if that one note doesn't work, the whole movie kind of falls apart. So
I agree. And that one note had better be a really sweet, lovely note, even if it's bitter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It better be like a good cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But exactly. This is not.
No.
Low-hanging, like you said. Quite concur.
Low-hanging, plastic, disappointing fruit. Number three, Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944.
Boy. And what kind of accolades does this movie have? Do we know?
Oh, 4 Oscar nominations.
Goodness gracious.
And it is 10th on the AFI's Greatest Movie Musicals list of all time. That's current. That wasn't made in like 1960 or something. So this is an odd case because, aside from the trolley song and Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, can you remember one song from this movie?
No, I just remember whatever the dad and the mom were like singing at the end.
Good moment. Yeah, good sequence.
Good moment, but I don't even remember the song.
Something about you and I.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yes.
That's not a song. We're remembering 3
you
words.
You and I could die in St. Louis tonight.
Oh, and they really could die. And we'll get into why later.
We will.
Yes.
We will.
So Mimi in St. Louis is just, it's so bland and also insane.
And then it has this amazing song at the end. It's like,
great song.
Here's a crappy musical. Have yourself a... Yeah. Where does that come from?
Yeah, and it lasted for ages.
Yeah.
Everybody and their mother sings that song. Mostly the mothers. And then last on the list, this might be a little bit more for you than me, but I think it deserves a spot because of its accolades. Again, AFI has named Philip Marlowe...
Oh, boy.
The 32nd greatest hero in film.
Oh,
and, of course, it finds itself in the National Film Registry, which is...
Oh, goodness. Hannibal Lecter was 31, I guess.
The Big Sleep from 1946, right?
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you. I do feel like you put that on there for me. We talked to draw the curtain back a little bit and let people see the Wizard of Oz at work. Except we have no wizardry or magic.
He just has
like that man.
Overalls and a crescent wrench.
And only one strap.
That's it.
The button broke on the other one, or the rivet.
And unless you like and subscribe, we can't afford to buy him new coveralls.
No, but we talked about, hey, why don't we do Casablanca?
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? That's such a, everyone knows that movie.
I've seen it, yeah.
And you were like, well, you know, I know that, you know, what about this one? I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I said I want to do a Bogey and Bacall movie.
Right.
I want to do a Humphrey Bogart movie, not necessarily a Bogey and Bacall movie.
Yeah.
And you were like, I have seen Casablanca. I haven't seen this one. Let's go with that.
And
how could it be bad?
How could it be bad?
Right.
It can be.
Yeah.
And obviously we had a differing opinion on that.
Yeah.
But
the delta between the expectations and reality.
Yeah. Again.
Huge.
Yes.
Like huge, right? I mean, I found a way to enjoying it for what it is, which is not smart, right? It's not like some third man or M level mystery that wraps itself up brilliantly. But like if the one note kind of works for you, then fine. Obviously didn't work for you, and therefore I can at least recognize, okay, this is not one of the greatest films ever made. It can't be. If the people who made it literally said, we don't even know the answer to that question you're asking about the movie.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, or something like I don't have to hate it to recognize that that's silly. Like, come on.
Yeah.
So, and the winner of this award, worst legacy movie is.
Thieving the Bicycles.
Yes.
Also known as Bicycle Thieves.
Also known as The Bicycle Thief. We didn't get a chance to talk about this
on the
episode.
That's true, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is what I think.
Okay.
And this is one of those international releases that had name change for whatever reason, translation and whatever. I always knew this movie as The Bicycle Thief. And then we looked up, you know, movies for the 40s, and you were like, let's do Bicycle Thieves. And I was like, is that a different movie than The Bicycle Thief? We found out, no, it is the same movie. It's just an alternate title. What is the difference that's made in the real title, Bicycle Thieves versus The Bicycle Thief? Like, I'm not saying this movie is worth a complete reappraisal right now. I'm just saying, think about it. The Bicycle Thief makes the movie about the guy who he's chasing. That's it. But if he actually steals the bike at the end, and there's actual consequences for that, which I think changes the movie altogether, right? Like, makes it a much better movie in a lot of ways. And it's called Bicycle Thieves, you know, and it makes it about the cycle of whatever. I think that it might have had something, but alas.
But alas, and alack, and fie, and other Shakespearean terms.
Yeah.
There's nothing to, like you said, man, this is, it's just, this takes the cake for us because it holds such a high pedestal.
Oh, yeah.
And we kind of feel like it's our duty to go.
Like, we're the only ones who don't like this movie.
Well, like, obviously, we don't have the power. I mean, yet. I mean, we're getting close.
We're getting,
we're
at 78%.
Top in the charts. I think it's us and Joe Rogan.
Yes.
And Conan is like third.
That's
right?
It. Yeah.
Okay. So we know our place in the podcasting universe is going to do very little, probably, to change anyone's opinion about it. We're not here to try to dismantle its status.
Its legacy, yeah.
But to question it and be like, really? Like,
yeah.
can we as a world of cinema lovers go back and go, okay, why?
Yeah.
Why?
Yes.
Do you love when people pronounce their W's like that?
Why?
What did he mean by who? I don't
and
understand
whom
that.
And when?
I'm not into that.
And that's whatever.
I think it's an East Coast thing. It sounds kind of pretentious to me.
Those idiots.
Kind of, but maybe those are the people that like Bicycle Thieves.
They love it.
You know, who am I to say?
Next award, Justin.
Let's do it.
You give us the award.
It's Best Bombshell
Moment.
Okay, probably good for clarification.
Yeah. Why do we don't want to be creeps?
No.
Yeah.
Nope, it's not about anyone's appearance.
No.
This is about the best kind of, not necessarily scare, or maybe it could be, or reveal, or, you know, kind of plot twisty moment.
Yes.
So in a pre-Sixth Sense world,
yes.
What did we get? So we have quite a few things here. Maybe I can just go through the list.
Yes.
And reveal while the Academy plays a relevant clip.
They're peeling some golden potatoes back.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they need to keep doing that.
Getting them ready.
Okay. So the first up from Cat People is that bus scare sequence.
Yes. And I think you can lump the chase in there too because it's all part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
That's, I mean, maybe there is something in some obscure movie before that, but I've never seen anything
this
that
is what
early
I see
that's like that.
Horror nerd dudes, they point to this as like, you know, this is the moment where we get what we know is the jump scare.
Yeah.
And it really, like, it's not like, oh, can't you see the seeds of it? It's like, no, this is exactly what people do now to way worse effect a lot of the times, right?
They
just go like, silence, bah! You know, and it's like your eardrums are on the floor.
Right.
The bus scare sequence is great. What's next?
We've got from Rope, Jimmy Stewart, and I'm ready for your accent.
Wow.
What does he suggest? Jimmy, what are you suggesting in rope?
Well, what I think is we should just kill each other.
Murder day? Yeah. Gosh, Jimmy. It's pretty dark for Stewart.
Surprising moment because it's Jimmy Stewart, right?
Yeah, like absolutely.
His character, people have talked about him being miscast. I really think that people just can't stomach it. You know, I think he's a really good character actor for this part.
I agree.
And I think people just don't like it. I think people don't like Tom Hanks playing a serial killer or something. And he's not a serial killer, but he's a more philosophical guy who says, like, well, I just think if it, basically it's The Purge.
Yeah.
If it were legal, you know, and it were warranted in some way, that would be fine.
Right.
You know, and hearing Mr. Smith, George Bailey say that is shocking.
It is. Know? Absolutely.
But I think maybe Hitchcock knew what he was doing.
I think so too. And, you know, I think that's what makes his turn at the end that much more convincing.
Yes.
Because then the Jimmy that we know, I should say, is back.
Yeah.
And it was just a philosophical exercise.
Yes.
But when he sees the dead corpse,
the reality,
he's like, oh, yeah, nah, man.
You're going to die, Brandon.
This ain't lit.
Yeah. You know? This is not lit, as the kids say.
Okay. Number trace. Meet Me in St. Louis has Halloween Anarchy.
Yes. Okay, this is what we were alluding to before.
Yes.
Justin, what the heck happens in the middle of this movie?
I don't know, because we get a foreshadowing of it in the beginning where they're like, Tootie, come inside. And she's like, where's my cat? And they're like, I don't know, Tootie. You know, like, you're seven. She's like, I'm going to rip out everyone's innards and stuff them in your mouth. And it's like, oh, okay. And everyone's just like, Tootie.
Oh, Tootie.
That's enough, Tootie. And it's like, what?
Stop threatening to disembowel your family, Tootie.
I got some kind of discipline as a child. Some bad things might have happened to me if I threatened to remove my parents' jugular.
Clearly, in this universe, in this cinematic universe, this was The Purge. Halloween night is The Purge.
It is.
The kids are just like, I'm going to murder the Jeffersons.
Yeah. Let's go kill them. And they're burning furniture in the streets.
There's a pyre. Yes. When's the last time you saw a good pyre, Justin?
You know, it's been a while.
It's been a while.
We're going to have the kids do it this Halloween.
And they also, they plot to pretend like they've been murdered by a bus.
Yes.
And that they're going to say, oh, the next door dude who you kind of have a crush on, that guy did it. He pushed us in front of the bus.
And then it's funny.
And it's hilarious.
My eyes are wide right now, listeners, because I don't maybe if it's my eye closer.
It's mystifying and not in a good way.
No, not at all. Okay, here we go. Coming up next.
Speaking of mystifying.
A Matter of Life and Death. And the moment that we were kind of alluding to in this
one
movie
moment
specifically would be absolutely anything. That occurred from start to finish.
Any moment, you pick any single thing that happens in that movie, and it's like, what in the crap?
Right. Yeah, literally.
From the goat boy to the freezing in time.
The Frenchman.
The Frenchman, the stairway from the heavens.
And heaven being kind of hellish.
Yes. The courtroom sequence where people just put their arms up.
I don't know what's going on in this movie, but there's a
lot of bombshells.
It's
bombs are going off.
Bombs over Baghdad.
Yes.
Sorry, Donald.
Yep.
Rumsfeld.
Rumsfeld. May he rest in peace.
Okay, and last but not least.
This is less funny, just great.
Yeah, The Third Man, that moment
when
Harry Lime is revealed.
It's so good. It's so good.
It's amazing. I think that might be one of... Well, let's give the award out, Travis.
Yeah, it's one of the best on the list, no doubt. Let's find out who won Best Bombshell. It was a tight race, but we're going to give the golden spud to the bus scare sequence from Cat People.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that pushed it just over the edge, while it's a great moment in The Third Man where that light hits Orson Welles' face and you know Harry Lime's alive and you know... Oh yeah, Orson Welles is in the movie.
Right.
It's just so great. What defines a trope going forward, right, is the bus scare sequence.
Absolutely.
The leading up to it, the atmosphere, and then the moment of like deciding we're going to use the air brakes of this bus to literally scare the audience with sound design.
Yeah.
And you get a little bit of that in the swimming pool sequence too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think because of its impactfulness on the genre going forward, that's where the golden spud lands. Congratulations, Cat People, and everybody who worked on it, who I'm sure
they're all still around.
They're around, just meowing,
and just passed a few of them in the streets.
Yes. All right. Before we go on to our next award, Justin, we have to thank a sponsor and give them a moment to do their thing. So let's. Yeah.
Greetings, movie lovers. Potato influencer Leprechaun Bob here from Leprechaun Bob's Potatoes. Do you have trouble relaxing while eating a potato? Do you find it hard to let go with a spud in front of you? Then try my new CBD potato. It has both the delicious taste of Leprechaun Bob's potatoes with the relaxing qualities of CBD. And if you still need a wee bit more help, add a glass of Leprechaun Bob's whiskey made from a recipe passed down from generation to generation. I remember making it with my grandma when I was a wee lad. After each batch, grandma would look me in the eye, one hand on my shoulder, the other holding a bottle of whiskey, and say, "Bob, this is mine." So call me Leprechaun Bob at 1-800-POT-O-GOLD and finally have a relaxing potato experience.
Okay, great. Thank you to our wonderful, illustrious sponsors. Mm-hmm. And we'll hear from the other one in a
later.
Few minutes.
And man, I'm just counting all those dollar bills coming in. Wow.
They're being mailed one by one.
I know. I'm counting one right now.
We really got to work on a system of like those tubes that you put things in and they go.
Yeah.
That would be better.
From wherever that sponsor is located.
Yeah.
Indiana.
Sweden.
I think.
Yeah.
Sweden, Indiana. Yeah. It's a commonly known place.
Let's go on to...
Let's do it.
Yeah. The next award in the Golden Spuds is where we give a director his due, or her due, in which case we recognize a film for great direction. We've got a lot of them this season. Mm-hmm. One thing that didn't happen was bad direction in general. So for best director for the 1940s, we have Justin.
Cat People. Jack Turner.
Jack Turner.
Or Jacques Tourneau.
Yes. Next nominee is Charlie Chaplin for The Great Dictator.
Coming up on his heels, Ropes, Alfred Hitchcock.
Of course.
Don't know if you've heard of him before.
He's all right. Third out of fifth. Not even close. Third slash fourth out of fifth, our last film of the series, The Third Man, directed by a man named Carol Reed.
And lastly, Stray Dog from Akira Kurosawa.
Who's that?
I think he's my uncle.
Okay.
Yeah. Or a neighbor.
Yes, Justin. Who's the award go to?
I'm opening the envelope. Sorry, the envelope is deep.
It's deep.
Oh dear.
Is that a sentient noodle down there?
Sam. Oh, it's Third Man, Carol Reed. Here's your potato, my friend.
That was a big one.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did a great job. So I wanted to find him something that, you know, said that with a potato.
What is there to say about Carol Reed and the Third Man that we haven't already said? Go listen to the Third Man episode because there's so much good stuff in that movie. What they do with character, visuals, surprising moments.
Yeah.
The integration of music and the fact that it is, like I said, I think multiple times, I believe peak noir. There's no question that it has the sort of detached emotions that you find with noir, but at the same time, it really says a lot.
Yes, absolutely. It's the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So, and I think one of the reasons we bestowed that massive spud onto Mr. Reed was I don't think Carol Reed ever reached these heights again.
No.
Right? So I think this is sort of the one moment. And not the case for some of the other directors, right?
Absolutely.
Jacques Tournier, what else did we... Have we watched something else by him already? Or have we looked it up and almost picked it? I swear there was something else.
Yeah. There was.
Yeah.
There was.
There's other good stuff in his filmography. Cat People is so good. Because it takes a simple genre-heavy concept, like we called it an extended Twilight Zone episode.
Yes.
And he just directs the heck out of it. Like, it's so much better than it should be.
Jack Turner did direct a lot of films. Out of the Past was the other one
we were considering
with Robert Mitchum.
Yeah, yeah. Which looks sort of weird and wild, like a matter of life and death in a way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cat People's great because it punches way above its pay grade.
Way above.
As a movie. What about The Great Dictator, Justin?
Yeah, I mean, the direction is why I think that movie is, I mean, the director is why that movie is remembered still, you know. And I think that is it's a good and a bad example of total creative control.
Yes.
Because that's what I think, if you have a problem with this movie, you probably don't like some of the creative decisions.
Right.
And talking about that final speech, which seems to alienate some people. For myself, I enjoyed that moment, but I can understand why other people would look at that and think, like, that is from a different universe.
Sure.
It does not belong in this movie.
That was a bit my take. So right. I think there's only really two ways you can swallow that last moment. But I mean, no doubt that, like, biting off as much as Charlie Chaplin did was, I mean, masterfully helmed that production, right?
Agreed.
Not to mention starred in it.
Agreed.
Alfred Hitchcock for Rope, right? Yep. I think for innovation alone, we have a guy who in the 1940s was like, I'm going to try as hard as I can to do a oneer. You know, to do it in one, basically in one shot.
And so while maybe later he went like, I don't know, that was really great exercise. Right. It probably is good overall because it increased, you know, it was kind of the test of like, how far can we push some of these technical ideas? And we're still seeing people like kind of one shot obsessed. That's kind of had a resurgence.
Yeah.
In the teens, especially.
In the Children of Men, Birdman, 1917. Yeah, there's a few.
So, I mean, I think he paved the way for them to have the ability to do
question.
Any of that. So,
yeah.
Thanks, Alfred.
Okay, and then lastly, this was a tough one, a tough call. I think it probably came down to Carol Reed and our last gentleman on the list, Mr. Akira Kurosawa for Stray Dog.
Yeah, and I think Akira doesn't get it just because his highs are higher later.
Because we know that it's coming. Yeah,
and I mean, Stray Dog is amazing.
It's amazing,
you know. But I mean, the Third Man might just be a little more amazing.
Just a little.
Just a little.
Just a little. All right. Next, we don't have an award to give out, but we need to remember some stuff.
Yes,
it's time, Justin.
Let's do it.
It's time.
It's time for In Memoriam.
So this season, we're gonna say goodbye. We're gonna say farewell.
I know.
Not just to Amanda, but to some things.
Yep.
We're going to say goodbye, Justin. First and foremost, to something we both hold quite dear, unless it's The Big Sleep. In which case, we're speaking, of course, about film noir.
Yeah.
Noir as we know it, we're calling it.
And, right.
It's not to say, right, that we don't have some noir influences from the 40s on until today.
Sure.
But the heyday, the peak, if The Third Man is peak noir, it comes at the end of the 40s.
Right.
And beyond that, the great examples are pretty few and far between.
I think so.
Yeah.
And I think the 40s is really where that, you know, noir is kind of birthed and, you know, comes into its own. And then everything after that, even if it has obvious noir influences, to me, it seems like even in the 50s, it starts to ape. It doesn't come naturally out of. I may not like The Big Sleep, but it doesn't, that doesn't feel like a forced aesthetic. It doesn't feel like a forced, you know, it's not like we didn't need this noir stuff to really help. Where I think few and far between are the areas in any movie sense, really, where it's like, even if the noir aesthetic helps, it's like you didn't, that wasn't an integral part of that movie's DNA.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, hey, let's do this story. And what if we do a noir?
Yeah.
You know? And so I feel like the 40s, that was just like where everyone's mind was at. Like,
yeah.
No, this, we're not calling it noir. We're just doing this.
We're doing movies. Yeah.
This is what we're doing.
And it comes out of books,
like,
right? Like,
exactly.
Books of that era fed into film adaptations, and then noir just existed.
Yep.
They weren't trying to do noir.
Right.
And for that reason, there's some great examples, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and early aughts of like, oh, Diamond in the Rough, Chinatown.
Right.
You know, something like that. That's like, it is obviously a self-aware movie. Yeah. It's in color. It was made in the late 70s. Or
Chinatown?
Early 80s. Late 70s, must be.
Okay,
And of course, it's recognizing its noir-ness, but it works.
Yeah.
So, noir as we know it, goodbye, farewell.
Adios.
I'll miss you forever. Maybe someday it'll come back.
Maybe. We can bring it back.
We can bring it back.
With our spuds.
Yep. What's the next thing we got to say goodbye to, Justin? This is a concept more than anything, and it's something that we sort of, we experienced more than we witnessed, right?
It's the greatest film ever made.
In quotes, yes.
In quotes, yes.
Air quotes.
Yes, they're concrete.
So what are we saying goodbye to? It's more for us.
We're saying goodbye to Bicycle Thieves.
Yeah. The film what, like Bicycle Thieves, yeah.
What can we say that we haven't already? Because I don't want to beat a dead horse, but...
We're saying goodbye to the idea that just because a universal acclaim exists, we're going to assume Bicycle Thieves is a shoe-in. We're going
right,
to assume
right.
Great Expectations is going to be...
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if anything, the movies we chose this season taught us to not be afraid... to maybe pick the movie we know is just better.
Right.
In the case of Casablanca or something. But also to just like watch every movie for what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's called the greatest movie ever made, just get rid of that to start.
Right.
And watch it as just a film.
Watch a movie first.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And just to not to, you know, you need criticism, and I'm excited, you know, next season, Travis, I think we'll finally be able to get into maybe a little bit of a discussion about movie criticism today. Might be some lacking.
It's coming.
Some lack of criticism. But, you know, I think it's really okay not to just get on the bandwagon.
Sure.
You know? And not to do the inverse either. Not like, oh, everyone loves this movie. Well,
I better hate it.
It sucks, actually. You know? No. I mean, again, we respect a lot of these people and agree with the critics about a lot of other stuff.
Yeah.
But Bicycle Thieves is one of those rare examples where it's we're kind of flabbergasted. Where it's just
Adam's
hard.
Rib was just as much of a bummer.
Right.
Because that,
absolutely.
That movie really...
But at least that one didn't come with the connotation of greatest comedy ever.
No, but I feel like it's close to that for a lot of people. It's like one of the greatest romantic comedies made, you know, kind of. I've heard things akin to that, and obviously, you listen to the episode. Not so much the case. Okay, goodbye to the idea of greatest film.
Farewell. Oh yeah, and just you know, on the heels of that, I would just recommend we be careful with our words. We do live in very hyperbolic, it's fine. I'm not trying to say, you know, like let's change our language and vernacular, but you know,
Can't love something.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, or this is my favorite. Okay. Or everything is awesome in our culture, you know, whatever. Yeah. But to say that this is the greatest movie ever made,
right?
I think that reveals a lot more about the person saying that than about the movie.
Right.
Because
you haven't seen enough movies.
Well, like, I don't know what I would say that about.
Right.
I hope, you know, if someone asks me, what's your favorite movie ever? I don't have an answer for you.
That's tough, let alone greatest film ever made.
Right.
Objectively.
Yeah, like, what is the greatest film?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to find the answer on user ratings on IMDb
or Box
Rotten
Office
Tomatoes.
Mojo or...
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All anyway. Right. Goodbye, greatest film ever
Bye.
Made. We hope to never see you and your conceptual nonsense ever again. We also have to say goodbye to a worldwide event.
Yes,
and I say event, it's not a potluck,
Or a race,
or a foot race.
Uh-huh.
We're gonna say goodbye to World War II, which is sad, and not sad because World War II was horrendous and atrocities were committed, obviously, but we're saying goodbye to an entire, really two decades of pre-post-war in some way influenced stuff. We're gonna go into our own version of that for the future in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
But World War II was unique, right, in that it changed the landscape of geopolitics and people's histories and all that. War sucks. It's terrible. We shouldn't do it.
Right.
But what happens when people go through horrendous things?
It's like baptism by fire,
You
know? And so you wouldn't have, looking just at our small list, the third man doesn't exist without World War II.
Stray Dog doesn't exist.
Doesn't exist. And so, again, it's not like, oh, thank goodness we had World War II. We're not that stupid. But it is, that's kind of a triumph, I guess, of humanity over their worst conditions, you know, over the worst kind of events that could befall us, that we go, okay, how do we pick up the pieces? What can we do with this now?
Yeah.
Because we, unfortunately, you know, hey, we might have a different series coming up about, you know, traveling through time or something like that.
We might.
But we can't.
Perhaps.
We can't do that in reality.
No.
At least not, you know, I mean.
Well,
you can. I guess theoretically you can, you know, and like Albert Einstein has some neat things to say about black holes. But we can't get in a time machine, alas, and go back to the past and, you know, like kill Hitler or whatever some of these movies are about.
Yeah.
But we can pick
Tarantino
up the pieces.
Tarantino can, just for the record.
Tarantino can go blow his face off in a movie theater, which is interesting. But, you know, the point I'm trying to make is just that, you know, what a credit to people that we don't just, that it's not all Bicycle Thieves,
oh,
right?
Yeah,
sure. Because if every movie we got out of World War II was Bicycle Thieves, there'd be no hope for humanity. We don't even get up in the morning.
No.
You know, no baguette, no spaghetti.
No baguette for you. Yes.
Which is not an Italian word.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You're right. No spaghetti for you.
No sushi for you, huh?
No. yeah, we know our accents.
It's just neat. It's neato, Travis.
It's so neat. World War II created some neat stuff. Let's say goodbye to one last thing, Justin.
Let's do it.
Which is, we're going to call it our fly in the ointment moment.
Oh, oink oink.
Know what I'm talking about?
I guess ointment is where I got the pig sound from.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was like a big old pig just walked into the room and went, wee! And we were like, what are you doing here, pig? Jeez.
And he left.
Yeah. This is a moment in the film, and this popped up a few times.
Yeah.
But we have a couple examples just to remind ourselves. A moment in a film that just doesn't belong,
yes,
right? Like,
okay.
Tonally,
yes,
or plot-wise, thematically, it's just this, what is this doing here, right? The first one is from The Big Sleep, Justin's favorite movie. Philip Marlowe walks into a bookstore to find out, hey, where's the man I'm looking for? And the lady, like every lady in this movie, is smitten with him.
Immediately aroused,
which is totally ridiculous. But it's so ridiculous that like they have this innuendo-laced conversation and they shut the blinds and it starts to go places and you're like, what is about to happen in this movie?
Yeah.
It goes on for like a while. Nothing happens.
I guess.
They don't like cut back.
No, I don't think anything.
But it's just like too long. And
they have a bunch of liquor in the, like, you know what we should say goodbye to in the 40s too?
Okay.
Is just everyone drinking their butts off.
Yeah. Well, that's 30s and 40s, really.
Right. I guess anything post.
But noir is the worst offender.
Well, because he goes into a bookstore and she's like, I've got some of that. And it's like, what? And she has glasses in her desk.
Every character in every scene, it's like, can I pour you a drink? Like,
why?
And their livers were pickled by the end of the movie. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So Big Sleep has that. Adam's Rib, right? This is the funniest film in 10 years, Justin, and yet it includes...
It starts with attempted murder, right? Like, and I get no one wants to see their spouse cheating. I'm not saying that doesn't enrage people to acts of violence.
Sure.
But
it's not funny.
Well, and it starts out and it's like, you know, she's going to kill him and it's not played for laughs.
Nope.
It's like, oh, maybe this is going to be kind of a drama.
Yes.
Nope. Then it's like, look at the circus in the courtroom.
Who
oh,
wears the pants in this family?
Hint, it's not... That, and then at the end, the reverse happens,
yes,
where Spencer Tracy is trying to kill her.
Yes.
But not really, because it's a licorice gun.
Ba-dump.
What is going on
with
this movie?
Yeah, that movie has a whole handful of them. Like, husband and wife hijinks, but also, I beat my wife sometimes.
Right.
It's hilarious.
It's so funny.
Let's say goodbye to that.
Hey, what, you know, one thing I forgot to mention in that episode, when he's on the stand.
Yes.
And before, you know, in her testimony, I think to her lawyer, privately, there's all these comments about her being fat. Do you remember this?
Yeah, a little
bit. Five times. And you look at her and it's like.
That's another thing.
Not even. I don't get it. Is it just a slur? Because she's not even remotely chubby.
He's a monster. Yes, I think. And it's not just him, though.
She's going fat. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
She's not.
I don't know if you knew this, but that character's not a great dude.
He's really?
He's not great.
Oh.
You should stop modeling your life after
this
him.
This changes today. My reading of the film.
It still sucks. Okay, and lastly, Meet Me in St. Louis, Halloween Anarchy.
Oh my goodness.
What is that?
It doesn't belong. Tootie doesn't belong in the movie.
In any movie.
Never.
She belongs in Lord of the Flies 2.
She's the captain.
Tootie comes home.
Tootie's roost.
Tootie Fruity. Yes. No, I imagine, Justin, because Meet Me in St. Louis, was it adapted from a... No, it wasn't a play, right? It was just made for the screen.
Yeah.
I wonder, like, of many movies of that ilk, right? We wonder, like, oh, I wonder what this looked like on stage before they did it on screen. And I'm thinking, well, Meet Me in St. Louis got adapted into a stage play after it was a successful film. What do they do with the Lord of the Flies Halloween sequence on stage? Are they just lighting chairs on fire in front of the audience
just
and
beating people up?
People are hanging from nooses, just like what? You know what I'm saying? Like,
I don't know.
I hope they leave it out.
I think you have to just excise that. Right? Because it makes a lot more sense.
I tried to excise it from my mind.
It's not working, is it?
No.
Tootie will haunt your nightmares.
Tootie will get you.
Hey, little man!
All right. Let's say goodbye to Tootie. Goodbye, let's say Tootie. Goodbye to all the flies in the ointments. World War II, the greatest film ever made in noir as we know it.
Yep.
We remember you. We light a candle for you and stick it in a potato and chuck it to the moon.
Like a candle in a potato.
Okay, let's move on to our next award, Justin. And it's about the notes and the rhythms.
The notes and the rhythms.
It's about the melodies and the harmonies.
And the time signatures.
And the tubas.
And the tempos.
Yep.
Tubas and tempos. Otherwise known as best tune.
The best tune.
Best tunage. Okay. So, for all the faults of Meet Me in St. Louis,
yes.
At least it has Judy Garland singing the new song at that time, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. I mean, that's a good song.
Easily the most marketable, popular, profitable song. Yeah. Not that that's the only barometer for success. Right. It's also a good song.
It's a good song, you know.
It's good.
Here we got the, From A Matter of Life and Death, this classic by Beethoven.
Yes.
The Naked Goat Boy's Pan Flute Ditty. Number 7.
That's when he walks up on the beach and there's a naked boy
playing the pan flute.
So he must be Pan.
But no.
But
he's just a naked boy.
And he has goats. He isn't a goat. Yeah, that's right. But he has a pan flute and he can rip a mean pan flute
melody.
What
is going on there?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Okay. Well, farewell to that, and also farewell Amanda from Adam's Rib.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good
best part of the movie.
We do, yes. Hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, that probably portrays our bias a little bit towards music, but I mean, hearing a Cole Porter tune in the middle of a crappy movie is like, oh, thank goodness there's something here.
It's like a dragon swooping in to fix everything.
Dude, if only. I'm telling you, that movie, I wish Ellie was here, because would rock.
I hope you're listening, because right now I want you to see, at the end of Adam's Rib, instead of Spencer Tracy and Katharine Hepburn, there's a dragon, right, who comes in and he eats Spencer Tracy.
Yes.
So he fixes the unhealthy marriage dynamic. And then he puts on a top hat and has a cane.
Yes.
And he taps his way to the finish line, crooning Farewell Amanda.
Oh, my gosh.
That fixes it.
Thank you, Travis.
Yeah.
I can now live with that in my memory instead of the actual movie, Adam's Rib.
Forever.
And it will be okay. Okay. And lastly, also something that's okay, from The Third Man. All of the zither music, or the Third Man theme.
Yes,
I mean it's just
called the Third Man, and it's by a zither musician, right?
Yeah, like some guy that he just saw playing in Austria that Carol Reed saw and was like, why don't you come here, young man?
How has this never been aped since? You know what I'm saying? Maybe I don't know everything, and I don't. But I'm saying, like, I haven't seen a movie that's like, oh, you know what? That worked for the Third Man. Let's bring back the zither. I can't.
Are you not familiar with the subgenre of film called zithercore?
Yeah, it's just people like punch dancing and zither music. You're right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
That works really well. All right. Who won the Best Tune Award, Justin?
Let's find out. Got to get into the device. Oh, there it is. Zither theme. Good.
Yep.
Was that the zither scene?
We'll cut all that out.
Okay.
The zither music from The Third Man is so cool.
Yeah.
It starts, you think this movie's going to be dark and a little dreary, and then this music comes in and it's kind of plucky. And
well, I mean, it's from the first second of the movie.
Yes.
That music comes in, and I don't know about you, but the first time I saw it, I just went like, I think I'm about to watch something different.
Yes.
Because usually, you know, for any other movie, that it's just a big score, which is fine. Some movies that works great for, you know, but you just get credits and you get, you know, bam, pa da pa da, and, you know, these swipes or these fades. You just see the zither strings being plucked.
Yeah, as you see they show credits. Them too. Yes. That's right. And then it goes right into the, like, kind of classic noir voiceover, but with zither instead.
And every time there's music, it's zither.
It's every time. Yeah. It's, you know what I think it's like? Until, like, the Bernard Hermans would come along, right, and start writing things like stuff for Hitchcock that is like, okay, I'm going to take the full orchestra, the full score, and, like, I'm going to do so much with it. So, such iconic, you know, cinematic style music.
Right.
Not canned kind of by the number stuff. I don't know. Maybe Carol Reed was just looking around at that point at, you know, film score composers and being like, there's nothing here that is as
doesn't capture
off kilter as the
Third
and
that's just so Austrian. You know, that's perfect for the venue. Yes. It's not, you know, he's not putting in, again, there's our friend the didgeridoo. Like, that would make zero sense.
That would be pretty cool.
That, not for that movie, though.
Justin?
Yes?
It would rule.
Oh. I'm sorry, sir. I give huge props to Carol for seeking that, for being smart enough to go, this is what this needs.
Absolutely. You know?
Let's think outside of the box, kids.
Think outside of the box. And I think we have a sponsor who can help you think outside the box.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Very excited for this.
Yes. So get a load of this, folks.
Man, work is stressful. I have no friends. And I am allergic to dogs.
Sounds like you could use a therapy cobra. They come in a variety of sizes for a variety of problems. We have a 5-foot cobra for when you just need a little therapy on the weekends, a 9-foot cobra for when the rent is due, and an 18-foot cobra for when there's no BFF in your life. Don't believe it? Believe these satisfied customers.
Hi, I'm Christy. I had some trouble losing those last 5 pounds, but then I got a therapy cobra and problem solved.
Hey. I used to have some problems, but now it's good.
And listen to this last testimonial from Roberta in the great state of Texas.
Roberta? Roberta? What the?
There's a f***ing snake in here!
Not sure if a therapy cobra is right for you? Check out some of our other therapy products, like Therapy Wombat. Therapy Ham. Therapy Clap-On Clap-Off Lamp.
Can't believe I got fired and was run over by a street sweeper in the same day. That's better.
So, call 1-800-THERAPY now. Life is hard, but it doesn't have to be with a therapy cobra.
Okay, great. We hope you find that helpful. Mm-hmm. If it's helpful for you in your life,
absolutely.
We have 2 more awards, Justin.
Oh, yeah, we do.
The 2 big boys. Let's go with the second to last, the penultimate award, Justin. Why don't you tell the folks about it?
This is for best acting performance.
Yes.
Notice that we gender neutralized that.
We neutralized the gender.
We're on
one.
A war path to neutralize gender. So anyway, we've got good old Charlie Chaplin in The Great Dictator, because I mean, he plays Hitler and he plays the tramp.
Hinkle and the Jewish barber. Yes. Yeah. Or Hitler and the tramp. That's right.
Then we have Toshiro Mifune from Stray Dog.
Man.
I mean, the dude carries that movie. Like, everyone is good in that movie.
Everyone,
though.
Including
Kiko Awaji.
Who may not be like the second build, right? Sato. Right.
What is that guy's name?
Yeah, no, we need to give him credit. So he obviously has a little bit more heft, a little bit more scenage, screen time, whatever. But she has some of the most like out there stuff in the movie, right? Like if you remember that dress sequence, he's like pressing her over and over, like, where is he? What? Tell me everything. And then she's just like spinning in the dress.
Yes.
And then he like screams at her and she's just...
Kurosawa asks his people to do a lot.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen a Kurosawa movie, he's not like, hey, let's go a little more
subtle.
He's
not David Mamet. Just read the lines.
No. Yeah, no. Yeah. He's Appa Mamet.
All right.
Takashi Shimura.
That's the guy.
He gets honorable mention as Detective Sato.
Sato, yeah.
I mean, if you've seen, he's in a lot of other Kurosawa stuff.
Of course.
And he's also
Scorsese, like, in his loyalty to his actors. Kurosawa.
Yeah, he totally is. Yeah. You know, that actually ended poorly. Like, him and Toshiro were estranged at the end of each of their lives.
That'd be like if Bob De Niro and Martin Scorsese were, like, shaming each other on Twitter.
Thankfully, there was no Twitter then.
Also, neither of them know what Twitter is.
But you know something, Travis? I just want to throw this in there in case you could delete this if we need to. But there is a movie that Toshiro Mifune is in.
Yeah.
It's a Mexican movie, and he plays a Mexican guy. And it's actually supposed to be a good movie.
I don't know anything about this.
I think we should maybe watch it, okay. Even if it's not for this podcast. Next up, Jimmy. Good old, is he still around here? I wonder. Well, hey, Jimmy.
I went to the bathroom. Take a little potty break.
Do you feeling all right, Jimmy?
I just wanna take a nap.
Oh dear. Do you need a drink of water? Something, Jimmy?
Murder Day.
Oh my. Jimmy. He's reprising his role as Dr. Murder Day from Rope.
He's great in this movie because of what we already said. He says some shocking dialogue because he's Jimmy Stewart, and I can't oversell the final monologue. Okay,
so
good.
I wish I could remember who it was. So I'd like to give credit. Yeah. But one critic, I think, said, you know, the trouble with Jimmy in this movie is he's asexual as an actor.
Okay.
And I go, why does he? This isn't like, we don't need Ben Kingsley or Hannibal Lecter. And
right.
Because that turn doesn't work the same. If you have somebody that's super sensual, even.
And it's not a visceral villain. He has not killed people.
Right.
He is not a murderer. He is a... What's horrifying about Rope, about Brandon and... Is it Philip?
Yes.
Brandon, Philip, and Jimmy Stewart's professorial character is they deal in the elitist world of ideas.
Yeah.
Right? And the scary thing is, what if somebody who just pontificates about how they are better than another class of society, what if they actually... You know,
act on that
figuratively or literally pulled the trigger on those ideas.
Yeah.
The ideas are scary.
Right.
Not the person. Right?
Exactly.
And
yeah.
I think that's what people miss about it is they're looking for their Norman Bates or something.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not.
No.
He's not that character.
No. Very, very well played, in my opinion.
Agreed. And then last, but certainly not least. Oh, well, we haven't got to last yet. I guess the last two.
The last two. Oops. That's what you were going to say.
That's totally, because they're in the same movie.
The last two, but certainly not least.
We have both from The Third Man, Alida Valli as Anna Schmidt,
she's so
and
good.
Orson Welles as Harry Lime.
Two different cases, right? Because she has a ton of screen time.
Right.
And he has very little, and both blow it out of the water, in my opinion.
Everyone does in that movie, though, right?
Yeah.
Even the silly, the Baron, and
so good.
Popescu. And
Popescu.
Everyone's
the
just
little creepy
great.
Kid who's like, kaput!
Yes.
Papa! Papa! Yes. Oh, man. That
it's
kid.
Disturbing.
Him and Tootie, man, they'll get you.
They're probably in league.
Yeah.
Hadn't thought about that. Another movie that dragons could help.
Stay away from those two.
Yeah.
And the winner of Best Acting Performance for our Golden Spuds is...
The answer is... this envelope is weird.
This one is in a canister. And who is that? That's Toshiro Mifune in there.
It's Toshiro!
Yeah. It's the one movie, I think, maybe aside from The Great Dictator, right, which is decidedly less... subtle and nuanced.
Yes.
That just lives or dies based on the protagonist's performance.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean...
Nothing else can carry that movie.
No. And if he's bad, the movie, I think,
is bad.
Fails. Yeah. And the other stuff can kind of survive a wonky performance.
Yep.
This, in this case, Toshiro Mifune not only makes the movie work, but elevates it a ton.
Agreed.
Nothing proves that better than the standoff sequence
at
the end, where they're just stone-faced. And he's, you know, we've seen him break down and do a lot, but he also shows that, like, he can do the just under the epidermis stuff, too. So, good job, Toshiro. We're there, Justin.
We're there.
We are there.
It's time to answer the big question.
This is the
Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, Mark McGuire,
the roided out cheater of a question.
Yeah, man, those guys gotta. Anyway, this is not a baseball podcast. Favorite film.
Favorite film.
So we're not really trying to answer what's the greatest film of all time.
No.
Or you know what is the greatest film of the series necessarily? But what did we enjoy the most?
That's the question. That's a better question.
Right.
Yes.
And for me, I think it's The Third Man. You know, I mean, for me, it's probably between Stray Dog and The Third Man.
Totally fair.
But again, because Kurosawa does, I think, as great as Stray Dog is, it's a movie I would rewatch 100 times.
Yes.
I think he gets higher. Remember Creed?
Yeah. Can you take me higher?
How could I forget? That's exactly like Kurosawa.
To a place. I heard that was the original song. That was going to be the theme. And then they got harmonica guy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Okay. So you like The Third Man was favorite.
It's my favorite because of so much of what we've talked about already. If I could put it in a nutshell, it's just that it takes so much of what it's not just a true human story that's kind of like forever, yes. You know, but if you also understand that maybe you don't have to be a historian, but just some of what's going on geopolitically and like, yeah. It's trying to answer questions like, where does America stand in the world?
Yeah.
You know, where does Europe go after this? What do we do? Because yes. World War II just happened and that was bad. And it does so in such a marvelous way, I think, in such a human way.
In the best way that noir ever can, was just take something pulpy and elevate it,
yes,
like way beyond.
Yeah. And that's what it does in spades.
Yeah,
my friend, what is your favorite film?
My favorite film, I have to, if we were going to pick the greatest film on this list,
yeah.
The Third Man is a perfect movie.
Yeah.
Stray Dog is pretty perfect, if I'm remembering correctly. My favorite film of this series, Justin, might surprise you.
Oh?
It comes from
Adam's rib.
It comes from...
Meet me in St. Louis.
Do you see this large
yeah.
thing coming down from the sky
oh, dear.
Into an operating room?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
What is that?
It's a matter of life and death.
Oh, wow. With the Frenchman?
And I think one of the reasons it was my favorite is because we got to watch it together. It was an experience of a movie, and I think I would have had fun part two, but, you know, when you watch a movie for the first time and it is that surprising.
Right.
That right. bonkers.
Right.
And some good stuff too, right? Yeah. Like, it's not a perfect movie. It really reaches in place, like, just too far, too wide. But with all movies like that, I always just, like, you gotta respect the swing. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
There's some visuals in that movie that still I cannot believe are from the year it was made.
They're, you know? Like 50 years ahead of their time.
So far ahead of their time. There's other things that are crazy that don't work as well. Mm. It was my favorite movie to watch and talk about the season. And after all, this is a freaking podcast, right?
It is a podcast.
Yeah,
it's a Sometimes podcast. I think that it's something else.
Yeah.
Once I asked my children if this was a swimming pool.
And they were like, Father, get out of the sinking depths of that podcast.
And I found Sam.
So that was the Golden Spuds, Justin.
That was the Golden Spuds. I'd like to thank all of our sponsors.
All of them.
Our millions of listeners.
All of them.
The colonists on all Mars and Alpha Centauri.
All of them.
Thank you to all of you. Thank you to Sam, the sentimental
wet noodle.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks for listening to this season, yes. This 40 series. Our friendship was tested. Our allegiances were codified. Our hearts were grown
our
three sizes.
Yes, indeed. Thank you to the 40s.
Yeah, thanks, 40s.
Thank you to movies.
Thank you to the United States of America. Next up, we have something completely different to cleanse our palate before the 50s.
Yes. Justin,
we're going to travel through time, my friend.
We are going through time.
Yeah.
And I am pretty excited to get going.
It's going to be great. We have all kinds of different movies on there.
We're going to go fast. We're going to go slow.
We're going to see things that you've definitely seen, and I'm quite certain a couple that you have never seen.
Hopefully there'd be some surprises in there.
Yeah.
For all of us.
For all of us.
Oh,
maybe we'll all learn some lessons along the way. Anyway, check us out next week for the first episode on H.G. Wells' The Time Machine from 1960. We're going to have some guests, too, so we'll see you then.
Yep, we will see you in time.
Top of the morning to ya.
Farewell, friends.